Well, greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It is Thursday. It's February the 8th, 2018. And this is your A2A webinar for this week. And joining us this week is a return guest, Ronnie Sterfela. Ronnie, if you recognize that name, is a very popular gold analyst. He writes a report that comes out once a year, and you kind of, I think usually sometimes you amend it as well, called In Gold We Trust. He's been doing that since 2007. He's a partner at Incrementum AG in Liechtenstein, but he lives in Vienna. At Incrementum, he's responsible for research and portfolio management. But again, as part of that research, those great In Gold We Trust reports come out once a year. The next one's due in May. And it is required reading for everybody in the gold space when they come out. So anyway, it's great to have Ronnie join us. And Ronnie, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Hi, good afternoon or good morning. Thanks for having me again. Really looking forward.
All right, everybody. You know why we use this A2A platform, this GoToWebinar platform? It's so that you, my dear friend and TFMR member, can ask the questions yourself of the guest. When you signed into GoToWebinar, you should have gotten a control panel that popped up. And in that control panel, there is a questions tab. You click it, you type in your question for Ronnie, and it comes to me, and I pass it on to him. But as is customer on here, I get the first couple of questions because, well, it's my site, right? So I, so it should work. All right, so Ronnie, here's the deal, man. It has been a pretty tough 5 years for all of us. And if we go back to 2009, 2010, at the end of the financial crisis, you know, the world decided it would try QE for the first time. We're just really direct monetization of debt, whether it's public debt, private debt, as the it doesn't seem to matter. And now they've done, I guess by some counts, $15 trillion worth of QE in dollars and euro and yen and everything else. So, Ronnie, we are now here in 2018. And it seems as if, at least to me, that all of the concerns that people had about inflation, maybe not all the way to hyperinflation, but inflation back in 2010 and 11, are now finally starting to come to the forefront. Now, back in 2010, 11, we had this tremendous run in the So I'm looking at this now. I'm seeing interest rates rising around the world. We're seeing inflation maybe beginning to pick up, the dollar falling sharply. What do you think of this thesis? Do you think maybe we are back to 2010, back to the future, and maybe poised for another good run in the commodities?
Yeah, I mean, I could give you a very very long or a very short answer. The short answer is yes. We're living in this age of what we call advanced monetary surrealism. And we should not forget that since 2009, we're seeing basically a globalized quantitative easing. We have seen that quantitative easing was pretty positive for asset markets. So we're seeing, of course, real estate, we're seeing stock markets, we're seeing bond markets, especially corporate bonds, emerging market debt, basically every asset class doing pretty well. As you know, I'm not only from Austria, I'm also a keen follower of the Austrian School of Economics, and I wrote a book called Austrian School for Investors. And the Austrian school defines inflation quite differently to the mainstream, because they say inflation doesn't necessarily mean rising prices. So rising prices are only a consequence of monetary inflation. So according to Murray Rothbard, basically, first of all, there's monetary inflation by central banks and commercial banks. This is the basis. Then the next stage is asset price inflation. And the third stage only is consumer price inflation. And Exactly. This is what central bankers want to have. They are often complaining about inflation being way too low. The problem is that they've got the wrong definition of inflation. So we have seen massive monetary inflation. We have seen massive asset price inflation. So the next stage is going to be massive price inflation. And I think that 2016 was basically the bottom for inflation. Since then, we're seeing commodity prices picking up. We're seeing purchasing manager indices picking up. We're seeing that the oil price, which is of course very, very important for price inflation, is doing really, really well, despite the fact that everybody is still pretty bearish on oil. So from my point of view, inflation will become a major problem going forward. Our incremental inflation signal is showing us rising inflation for a couple of months now. And I think this is also what the price of gold is discounting now. It's discounting higher inflation rates. It's discounting that the US economy is not doing as well as many people would suggest, which also means that probably this rate hike cycle is close to the end. And I think, we should not forget, if quantitative easing was positive for asset prices, then probably quantitative tightening, which is really kicking in the next couple of months, will be negative for asset prices. And where shall all the big money flow into? I think gold is a pretty good choice.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of in a sense that you've touched upon the broad thesis of what I've been talking about here at TFMR for months now, and that's just this idea that as asset allocators, as money managers such as yourself, valued sectors, whether it's equities, you could make the case of the bond. And there's really only one undervalued sector out there. So if you're going to rebalance, if you're going to look to shift to take some money out of an overvalued sector and put it into undervalued sector, the only place you can find undervalued stuff is in the commodity sector. You see the dollar dropping dramatically, and then that's breaking down of a maybe a 3 or 4 year pattern, while copper and crude, as you mentioned, are breaking up and out. Ronnie, all of this kind of ties back together to a chart that you had in that you guys put out that was part of your latest in Gold Retrust last summer. I'll put that chart here again in this podcast page, but it basically shows, I mean, going back to 1971, a cycle of commodity prices versus the S&P. And we are now at the lowest levels on this whole chart going back almost 50 years. I mean, it almost all of those things come together. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's a no-brainer or a can't-miss deal, but holy cow, there sure seems to be a lot of things aligning in our favor in 2018.
It seems so. I mean, this chart that we published in our last gold report, it became quite a big thing. It's showing the S&P 500 as a ratio to the GSCI commodity index. The reason why we're focusing on ratio charts is that in this world where prices are so heavily distorted by QE and low rates, I think absolute prices don't have too much significance anymore. Therefore, I think ratios, so relative prices, are really important. And I mean, this chart basically confirms our thesis. We're following the Dow theory, which says there's always in a trend basically three stages. There's the accumulation phase, where the smart money is buying in against the general trend, when the media sentiment is basically worst. Then the next stage is the public participation phase. This is the longest phase. And then we've got the distribution phase, which is the mania phase. And I think gold has been in this accumulation phase, 2015, 2016, and now we're in the beginning of this public participation phase. Why do I think so? I think the price chart is actually doing pretty well. Nobody cares about gold at the moment. So if you talk to private bankers over here, nobody would basically recommend holding any gold. While in 2010, 2011, everybody said, okay, you have to have at least 10 to 15% physical gold in your portfolio. The media doesn't care about gold. They're all about Bitcoin, about cryptocurrencies, about stocks, and so on. The analysts are still pretty bearish on gold. So I'm seeing some sort of divergence between prices and the perception of the market. And that's should be a pretty good environment. And you mentioned the dollar. I think that Donald Trump, he often said in his campaign that he wants, that he needs a weak dollar for his reindustrialization of the US economy. And actually, since he became president, the dollar is extremely weak. And now, quite recently, we had Mr. It's really hard to say, Mnuchin, Steve Mnuchin,
That's pretty close. That's pretty good for an option.
openly saying that basically they want a weak dollar. I think this was sensational. So it's not a secret anymore that the US wants a weak dollar, but it's not a secret that the ECB, for example, is really concerned about the strong euro. So of course we are in this currency war, but there is only one currency that is not participating in this currency war. And this currency is called gold. So that makes me really confident regarding gold. And we're always showing this long-term chart of gold in several currencies. And gold is basically rising in every currency since 2016. So last year, gold was up in dollar terms 13%. I think it's not that bad. This year it's basically flat. So I think we're at the beginning of this public participation phase, and that's gonna be quite a ride.
Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking when you laid those phases out there. That's what I thought too. I was thinking, yeah, you know what? We're right at the beginning of the public participation phase. And I'll give you one last thought, and then we'll get to some of the listener and email questions. The difference that I keep looking at for now versus the last time everybody focused on the commodities and inflation and the detrimental impacts of QE. I mean, the difference is the $15 trillion of QE, whether it's in dollars or yen or euro, that are now sloshing around the planet. You know, there's a limited supply of, say, Bitcoin, and that, you know, all these dollars, though, that are out there, that's all part of what drove Bitcoin up so fast, you know. Gosh, if the focus comes back onto our sector in the months ahead, and just a little bit of those QE dollars come sloshing into the limited supply of commodities or the limited amount of mining shares, it would seem to, you know, have the potential to get rather disorderly, wouldn't you say, perhaps?
Well, I would say, yeah. I mean, I would say the money of QE that's printed, that's out there, and it's found its way into asset markets. And I think that we should not forget that, you know, if you draw a long-term chart since 2000, basically, this also qualifies as a pretty healthy correction. Although, of course, it really hurts seeing such a drawdown. But what I'm mostly doing is I'm focusing on gold as a currency. And
Yeah.
if you calculate a ratio between the basically the US gold holdings and different monetary aggregates, you can say that gold is basically cheaper than ever. So the gold backing of the US dollar is basically at the same levels like 1971 or in the year 2000. I think it's roughly 8% at the moment. And this clearly shows me that there's lots of value, if you will,
yeah.
in the gold space. Of course, also the same goes for the mining stocks. I'm often showing this chart with the free cash flow of the companies in the gold bucks index, and I think it's pretty interesting. The free cash flow of those companies in the gold bucks index last year was higher than in 2011 when gold was trading at its all-time high. So I just see that the companies really did their homework. We have seen Creative Destruction. Those companies are leaner, they are more efficient than back in the days of the bull market. And my lovely wife, you know, when does she buy Christmas decoration? She doesn't buy it in November or December. She's buying it in January when it's off 50%, when nobody
right.
cares about it.
Right.
So we all know that this contrarian investing is hard, but it's the right way to approach markets.
Right, right. Well, I actually the first email question goes right into something you just mentioned. And so I'm going to kind of veer off in that direction at this point, Ronnie. And again, I've got a couple questions stacking up in the queue as well. If you've got something specific you'd like to ask Ronnie, just click the questions tab and type it in. It comes right to me. But I've got two questions that were emailed to me by folks that couldn't join us. And you mentioned the U.S. Gold reserves. And so this comes from Bruno. Bruno Mars, actually, is a fun of guy on the site. No, I'm just kidding. But he worked, you know, Bruno Mars, you know who Bruno Mars is, correct?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, and he's got the 24 karat thing, you know, the 24 karat. Yeah. So it would be perfect if he was a gold bug. But anyway, I digress. This is not from Bruno Mars, but we'll pretend it was. Bruno wants to know, does the U.S. really have 8,000 metric tons of gold? And then why do you believe that if you do, and what are the implications if they do not, or if they have less?
Well, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. And I've had so many discussions about it, over a couple of beers or glasses of wine. And at the end, we came to the conclusion, we simply cannot know, but I think, you know, that's what Jim Ricketts, who's on our advisory board, he said, if you want to play with the big boys, if you want to play high stakes poker, you got to bring enough chips to the table, and those chips are golden. So I think it's no coincidence that the Chinese are buying big time. They've got much more than they officially published. It's no coincidence that the IMF is a large holder of gold, that the Germans are repatriating their gold. We've got the Italians, we've got, of course, the Russians, we've got Turkey. All those central banks are buying gold. And the question is, you know, if you hear any comments from central bankers, it seems they don't really care about gold, or if they say anything about gold, it's mostly negative. But there must be some reason why gold is still by far the largest monetary reserve of all central banks. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, sooner or later, there will be a currency reform. It has to end up like that. We are in this new, in this big experiment, basically since 1971. I think we're closer to the end than to the beginning of this experiment. And I think those countries coming to the poker table, bringing their chips, of course they will say, okay, our new currency, perhaps there's going to be some sort of a global currency. There has to be some backing, and of course gold will play a major role. So I didn't really answer the question, but I think I would, if I would have to bet, I would say that the US still holds the gold. That's just my 2 cents on that. But at the end, nobody really knows, only a couple of people probably.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to go with it, I guess, until proven otherwise. But and we do know most of it's overstated by 10%, because most of it's the 90% coin melt variety, yeah, right? From gold. So that's even overstating it some. Anyway, I do want to go to the next question though, because I think it again is a good kind of follow up to what we were just discussing. And this one comes from Mike, and he mentions that you know, the Chinese have kind of in fits and starts over the last couple of years, but really in the last couple of months, have been working out this yuan denominated crude oil contract. And there was a thought that it was going to begin trading back on January, I think it was 18th. And then a notice came out that they're not going to do that until after the Chinese New Year. Anyway, I mean, at this point, it sure seems like it's coming. And so anyway, Mike's question is, how do you see that? You've written about it before in Gold Retrust, I know that. So how do you see that affecting the dollar this year and next? And will it eventually end the whole petrodollar scheme?
Well, that's I think that's a big part of the what we call the de-dollarization. I'm just wondering why this new contract, why it takes so long and why there's such a delay. But still, that's only one part of this whole story of the de-dollarization. I think we're right in the middle of this process. We will write a big update, a big chapter about this de-dollarization in an upcoming gold report. So I think basically the process from one global reserve currency to the next global reserve currency, that's not just one moment in time. That often takes even decades. And I think that the days of the US dollar being global reserve currency, they're numbered. I think, you know, as Luke Groman recently said, history strongly suggests that betting on the people with all the guns and most of the money, if they want the US dollar to be devalued, it is going to be devalued. So I think that all those measures taking place at the moment, all those agreements between the Saudis and the Chinese, for example, the Turkish and the Russians and so on, basically circumventing the US dollar, facilitating their trade in their respective currencies. I think this is it's very critical for the international status of the US dollar. Now, I think it's no coincidence that the very first trip abroad by President Trump went to Saudi Arabia. Uh-huh. He knows that if the Chinese directly trade oil with Saudi Arabia, this will be a nail in the coffin for the US dollar. So I think this de-dollarization is definitely picking up momentum. But I do not really agree with many people saying that the Chinese will be announcing some sort of a gold-backed renminbi or Chinese yuan, because the consequence would be that this currency would be extremely strong. And I don't think that the Chinese, with all those problems, I think China is the biggest credit bubble in history. Having a look at their debt numbers, it's really frightening. So I don't think that they really want a very strong currency with their very, very strongly export-driven economy. So I would say, if this contract, the oil contract, will be announced, I think that might also result in some, let's say, geopolitical tensions and those tensions are already coming up, as we all know. So this is definitely a very, very important topic to follow. I think this de-dollarization is one of the most important drivers for asset markets at the moment.
Yeah. Ronnie, let me ask you just a personal question, because whenever here in the States, when I talk even just like to friends of mine about the dollar and its role as reserve currency and the strength of the dollar, I just get blank faces. So then from there to talk about the dollar not being, you know, the king of all currencies. Oh, geez, Louise, it's, you know, I might as well just be talking make believe. Nobody can even comprehend that. But when you have that kind of discussion, you know, in your work around Europe, what kind of response do you get? Do you get, can people see a time when it's not going to be the dollar as reserve currency?
Well, just to give you a perspective on those longer time horizons, you know what the fourth biggest city was roughly 120 years ago?
Fourth largest city. I could guess, but I'm not gonna. Go ahead and hit me with it.
Vienna.
So, no kidding. Yeah, I guess Austria-Hungary Empire, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that was, it was a huge empire. We shouldn't forget that Egypt was quite important back in the days. Yeah, that the Roman Empire was quite big back in the days. And actually studying the fall of the Roman Empire is pretty interesting when it comes to currency debasement as well. So I would suggest Americans saying that it's impossible that the US dollar will lose its role. Suggest to study some history. I think, as I've said before, that's a long process. That's not one moment in time, and we should not forget that this privilege having the world reserve currency. Of course, that's really important, because it basically means that you can consume products with freshly printed money. You have this privilege that I don't know the English term, unfortunately.
Exorbitant.
Yeah. Exactly. That brings you quite a lot of advantages, but it also means that you're having quite a lot of responsibility. And this is always the case when the US dollar gets too strong. You're mostly seeing crises in emerging markets. So actually the whole world would profit from a very weak dollar, but that also would mean if the dollar would be significantly weaker, that would mean significantly higher inflation rates within the US. So as I've said before, this de-dollarization is taking place. I don't know what the next reserve currency will be. Probably it will be some sort of a special drawing right thing that was called monetary LSD. It is, a friend of mine said, money used to be IOU, then it became IOU nothing, and the SDR is who owes you nothing. But I think, you know, Craig, if there's a some sort of a crash, and we all know that 2008, since then basically no problems have been solved. We're seeing that central banks, they basically painted themselves into a corner. So at the moment, especially for the European Central Bank, but also for the Japanese, it's impossible to lower rates. 2009, they came up with something new, something that sounded extremely sophisticated, quantitative easing. Now we've got that. So what are they going to do in the next crisis? Who are they going to blame? So I think that within the next crisis, that will probably be will make look 2008 like a kindergarten party, there will be some sort of a globalized monetary reform. That's just what history tells me.
Right, right. And you know, I've often thought that since 2008, the Chinese are anticipating that. You know, that yeah. they're slowly laying the foundation to have, you know, all these swaps. You know, the yuan denominated gold contract, the soon to be yuan denominated crude oil contract, not to flip the switch, like you said, you know, at a moment's notice and be an economic aggressor, as Trump would call them, but just to have this stuff as an alternative because they were caught flat footed last time. Would that be accurate, Ronnie? I think I lost you there again for a sec.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I kind of lost you the last couple of seconds. What was the question? Sorry.
Oh, just in general that the Chinese are setting all this stuff up. You know, whether it's all these direct currency swaps, you know, that are now in place that they put in place over the last 10 years, or it's the stuff on the Shanghai exchanges. That it's not so much to flip the switch out of the blue as an you know, what Trump would call an economic aggressor, but just recognizing that everything just got papered over 10 years ago, that the day of reckoning is still coming for the debt-based system. And when it comes, they want to have some foundation in place that they didn't have 10 years ago.
Of course, I mean, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why they're also encouraging their people to actually buy physical gold. Yeah.
Right.
I think with China, we're just... We should not forget that when it comes to physical gold, the Western world is becoming completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
So who are the big buyers at the moment? It's mostly emerging markets, not only from an investor side, but also from a central bank demand. So it's really this big trade, gold coming from the West into the East. And normally capital always goes where it's best treated. And where the outlook is best. So I think this is another big trend that is happening at the moment. Although I have to say that the German speaking countries, especially Germany and Austria, we had massive hyperinflations, and this basically prepared the foundation for Adolf Hitler and the Second Right. World War. So I always say it's in our monetary DNA to buy and to give away physical gold. So over here, actually, gold demand is quite strong. I can sense that it's not like in 2011 or during the Euro crisis, but it's really strong. So the interesting thing is that people start buying counter-cyclical. They really are buying the dips over here, and that makes me pretty confident.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you can see it in the price, right? I mean, that's all part of what ended the bear market and has now sent us off moving higher again. I thought I had a number of questions for you in queue, but I actually only have one. And the other things were like, gosh, Ronnie's great and Ronnie sure is smart and that kind of stuff. So I just have one question at this point. So if anybody wants to sneak one in, just type it in and you'll be next. This comes from Thomas. I'm reading this. I'm not maybe he can clarify a little bit what he meant, but I'll just read you what he wrote and we'll see if we can decipher it. He said, do you think that the reserve banks use the ratio in that commodity ratio of, you know, commodities versus S&P. I think they use this ratio, stocks versus gold, as a trading tool, specifically against gold. Like, you know, like when he's citing that gold often goes down just when the New York Stock Exchange opens.
I don't think so. That they're using it. That is something that of course there's intervention in the gold price, but I don't think that everything is about the manipulation of the gold price. We should not forget that gold is extremely liquid. It's in fact one of the most liquid markets around the world. So often in stress situations, people would expect gold rising significantly, and then gold actually goes sideways or it even falls. Right. And I think one answer to this question is that in stress situations, liquid positions have to be sold off, and that's why funds and big institutions often sell off gold. Now, when it comes to the intervention or manipulation, I think that, you know, everything is manipulated today. I mean, quantitative easing, that's of course a big manipulation of bond prices.
Right.
And of equity prices, you know, the Swiss National Bank, for example, but also the Japanese, they are buying equities big time. The manipulation of interest rates, that's by far the most important price that we have as a signal in our economy. And the distortion or manipulation of this price is so important, and it has such grave consequences. So I think it's not only the price of gold where we're seeing massive interventions. It's basically every price nowadays.
Yeah. All right. Now I've gotten some questions. People are like, oh boy, I better get these questions in. So now all of a sudden I've got a handful of them, and we'll see if we can run through them real quick, because you're being generous with your time. But I don't imagine it's starting to get dark in Vienna. And I know the little Sturfelers are due home soon, so we'll wrap this up soon. Ned wants to know, do you see blockchain impacting?
Well, yes, I did a presentation that I thought was really interesting. It was at Minds and Money in London, and I quoted a great colleague, Adrian Day, and he said people are expecting too much from gold, because stocks are doing so well, volatility is at all-time lows. Well, of course, that was a couple of weeks ago. We're seeing real estate rallying, bonds trading close to all-time highs, trust in financial system and the banks is back, even in politicians. We're seeing low price inflation, we're seeing quantitative tightening, and we're seeing cryptocurrencies stealing the show from gold. So what I wanted to say in this presentation is actually the environment for gold is not that positive. We're seeing quite a lot of headwinds, and those headwinds will reverse, they will become tailwinds. But cryptocurrencies itself, you know, when I'm talking to journalists over here, they're not really interested in gold, because, you know, they have to sell stories. They're in the business of selling news, of selling information. So nobody really cares about my forecasts on gold. But if I would be saying Bitcoin will hit 100,000, of course, they will pick up the story. So I think that cryptocurrencies, well, I would say I love competition, and I think it's really, really important. So competing currencies is something really, really, really positive from my point of view. Currencies coming out of the free market. And this is why a couple of months ago, I really said, okay, I embrace the idea of cryptocurrencies, because people start questioning money again. They say, okay, is Bitcoin money? What is money actually? Is Bitcoin better than the euro, than the US dollar, than gold? So I really enjoyed that there were lots of young people, because the crypto space, you know, this is mostly like male guys between, I don't know, 18 and 35. Yep. But those young people, they really started discussing money. What I didn't like the last couple of months, those were mostly, I would say, adventurous coming into this market and buying because they expect the price to become a 10-bagger or rise, I don't know how much, within a short time frame. And they were buying because of this fear of missing out. But in general, I would say there's great possibilities to combine physical gold and this new technology, and there's fantastic Innovations coming up. I think the Perth Mint just announced something. We've got in our upcoming gold report, we will write a whole chapter about the combination of physical gold and blockchain technology. And I think the good thing about is this makes gold more accessible for younger people, because young people, they don't go to a, you know, to a coin dealer and buy a 1 ounce coin of whatever. They want to buy it digitally. They want to buy it online. So I think in the long run, this will be extremely positive for the price of gold.
I agree with you. You touched, no doubt. You touched upon a number of things that I mean, you're almost like repeating stuff that I've said here. It was remarkable. The Bitcoin stuff is great. It is teaching, if anything, a whole new generation of people that money isn't just a dollar. And there's great value in that going forward. Just two quick questions here, and then we'll wrap up, Ronnie. Dan just wants to get your thoughts on, at least at this moment, the stability of the EU and how Europe is doing economically.
Well, economically, Europe is doing extremely well. I mean, it would be sad if we've got very low rates and massive quantitative easing. Sorry. Without any effects. But I think the ECB, I don't want to be Mario Draghi at the moment. He must have sleepless nights, because he wants to tighten. They are even much more behind the curve than the Federal Reserve. But every time he announces some tightening, the euro goes significantly stronger. And unfortunately, our central bankers, or as it's called in German, Währungshüter, which is, I tried a way to they are basically the safeguards of our currencies. Wait, let me
actually, I think if you translate that directly into English, it is criminal bastards.
No. No. In Währungshüter would be guardians or custodians or keeper of the currency. So they should be protecting the currency. Nowadays, they only want weak currencies because that creates inflation and that stimulates, but only for the very short time, it stimulates growth. So Mr. Draghi, he must be having a hard time, because nowadays at 125 to the dollar, people would say that the euro is already way too strong. But, you know, having a look at all those statistics, I think it's no coincidence that typical hard currency countries are the most prosperous, the wealthiest and the strongest countries, and not those countries with, you know, very, very weak currencies. So I think this is a very sad development. Politically, of course, we've just had this announcement that the socialists and the conservatives will form another coalition in Germany. Well, as Ludwig von Mises once said, at the end they're all a bunch of socialists. So I think that politically, things kind of stabilized, but only on the surface. So things coming up like in Catalonia, those recession movements, secession movements, sorry. I think this is only a consequence of the economy that is not doing so well. I think populism in general is only a consequence of people having a hard time, how do you say, making ends meet. We've got a statistic in our last gold report showing for the most important industrialized countries, 2/3 of all households had falling real household incomes in the last 10 years. So actually, we're not doing so well, and this is no coincidence that people are voting for change and that they're voting against the status quo.
And do you kind of get the sense, Ronnie, that it's like there's this calm surface just because you know, the stock market's hanging in there. And on the, again, it just kind of, but it, as soon as crisis reappears, as soon as the stock markets are really tumbling, you know, and all that kind of stuff, I mean, all that, all the stuff, you know, the, I mean, they're just going to come rushing back, almost feels like. Do you think so?
Well, I would say, you know, that the volatility that we've seen just recently, that was a big warning shot, a really big warning shot. I think that, you know, on the surface it's calm, but below the surface there's enormous pressure building up, and I think with, you know, the short volatility trade, it was kind of unwinded, but now it seems everybody is back to normal. But we have seen the same thing in 2007, 2008 as well. It took a while until the whole crisis really developed. So I think, as we said at the beginning, this will be quite a year. 2018 will be really a roller coaster ride.
Ronnie, can you give us just as a last one last question, kind of give us a hint of the direction you're going? I mean, it's you're only 90 days away or so from the next In Gold Retrust report, so I know you're getting a lot of work done on that. Can you give us a couple of hints as to what we're going to see in that report when it comes out?
Oh well, first of all, it will be published probably on the 29th of May, and like every year, we will try to write less than the last year. Last year it was 170 pages. I'm not sure if we can do it again. We normally fail. So we're already preparing the chapters. We're writing about financial repression, of course. We'll be writing about the de-dollarization. There will be an interesting interview with Luke Roman. There will be an in-depth analysis of the gold to oil ratio. We will, of course, talk about gold and blockchain, as I've said before. And I think this is also going to be really interesting. We will write a large chapter about John Exter, who was a really interesting gentleman. And we will do a special interview with his son-in-law. And yeah, so lots of work coming up the next couple of weeks, but I'm really looking forward. And yeah, mark your calendar. 29th of May is gonna be the release date.
Will do, will do. Well, you know, and maybe we can do another one of these you know, sometime later on this summer or something like that, once it's been out and
Of
everybody
course, of
has a look
course.
at it. It'd be fun to visit again. But in the meantime, we're pushing up against the end of our time limit, and we still have to get to the final four, Ronnie. So I think we better stop and dive right in. Remember, these are just four fun, quick questions here at the end of the show where you usually answer them with just a, you know, one word or a sentence or something like that. If you're ready, can we get started?
Sure.
All right. You know, the Winter Olympics are going to start here today, tomorrow, something like that. I'm sure you're a big fan.
Yeah.
You know, all these controversies out of the last one. So I just want to know if maybe if you personally have ever been accused of blood doping.
Only with beer.
Check, because you know they did in Russia. All those Russian guys were.
No.
So blood doping wouldn't increase your performance at the keyboard as you're typing in the report. Nothing like that.
No, there are some stories about Russian athletes, and you hardly could tell if they were actually male or female because they were their hormones were so messed up with all the doping.
They be on. All right. So then the next question, I guess, a little more legitimate. Of all of those Winter Olympic sports, which is your favorite?
Of course, skiing, downhill racing. Being an Austrian, skiing is by far the most important sports over here, and everybody is crazy about skiing and slalom, but also downhill is like the most important discipline.
Okay, so that I'm gonna move number question number four up to number three. So, are you more of a Franz Klammer guy or a Hermann Meyer guy?
I I would say Hermann Mayer, the Herminator. He was such a fantastic athlete, and he's got a great sense of humor. I really like him a lot.
Yeah, he won, I mean, probably twice as many World Cup titles, didn't he? I mean, he was Herman, remarkable.
And Franz Klammer was a bit before my days, actually.
He and I actually, as an old man, I remember Franz Klammer pretty well. So that's why I put him in there. All right. And then lastly, and this is mainly for all my Canadian listeners, have you ever tried curling?
No, but I'm really fascinated of watching it during the Olympics. I think it's I'm not sure if it's really a sport, but I remember a couple of years ago there was a team I don't remember from which country. They were actually they were getting out the Olympics because they said so their curling team, they basically said we're finished because of physical issues. They were just stressed out or too how do you say too tired to taken out to wear worn out. I thought that was pretty interesting because it's it doesn't look like being really exhausting, but it's fun to watch, and it's really good to fall asleep.
And it's like darts in a sense. I they have darts now. I was flipping around BBC. I saw on BBC one Saturday morning. Like, you've probably seen this. I mean, darts is like a big deal
It's
in
huge.
Europe. So if
It
darts
is.
is a sport, for God's sake, why isn't curling?
I agree.
If anything, they should have it where if they really want to make it interesting, they should everybody each team should have to like slug a beer between rounds, that'd probably be more realistic. That's probably what the Canadians do when they curl. So maybe that's what they should institute that rule at the Olympics too, and make it far more interesting. So anyway, hey Ronnie, just fabulous to talk to you. And I agree. I think this year is going to be, it's really going to be something. We've never seen bonds back up like this. It was such a dramatic move over the last 120 days or so. The dollar now retracing back down the rally that it had in 2014. The metals looking like they're about to break out to the upside with commodities. It's going to be a really interesting year. We all look forward to the next In Gold We Trust report, and I know we all look forward to hearing from you again, maybe another 6 months or so, and we'll just see how things are progressing.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It's been, as always, a great pleasure. Thanks a lot, Craig. And all the
Ronnie,
best to your listeners.
thank
Take
you very
care.
much, and thank you for your
Thank
time,
you.
and really everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.